Welcome to Christchurch Manchester Sermon Podcast. CCM is one church that meets every Sunday in various locations across Manchester. For more information about who we are or about our Sunday meetings, please visit www.christchurchmanchester.com.
My home is not on this earth, not in this world.
Evening. So it's wonderful to be here, to be able to kind of share with you on the most important date, actually, in the Christian calendar. Okay, if you don't know me, and I realise that applies to a lot of people here in the room, my name's Andy. I'm part of the leadership team here at Christchurch Manchester in Fallowfield. We meet here every Sunday. And I've called myself a Christian my whole life. Okay, I couldn't tell you the exact point where I actually kind of became a believer. Couldn't highlight one moment. But there have been various milestones along the way. But something I've noticed in my 25 years of calling myself a Christian and being involved in Christian communities is that, to be really honest with you, Christians are a bit of an odd bunch. All right, we as Christians are a bit of an odd bunch. There's some things we do that are just a bit, on reflection, just a bit strange, okay? So growing up as a young person in the church, I learned that Christians love a wide game. Okay, you ever done a wide game? If you have, it probably happened in a church community, okay? We love quiche, okay? Quiche is our absolute favourite food, apparently. It's at CCM, I think it's garlic bread, all right? But we love that kind of stodgy food. We love board games, Articulate, a particular favourite. Most of us at some point have been forced to go camping. Christian camps are just a thing, apparently. We invented such things as the side hug and the phrase, leave room for Jesus, that's ours. Thankfully, I think we're beginning to leave behind the socks and sandals stereotype, okay? But I've noticed in my 25 years that Christians are a different bunch, okay? Now, the Bible tells us that we should be slightly different. You know, we do different things perhaps with our time, different things with our money. But I want to talk for the next 15, 20 minutes or so about what I think is the strangest thing that Christians do. And this is something that not just Christians in Britain, but Christians across the world do. And that is get together to celebrate the death of an alleged criminal who died on a Roman cross 2,000 years ago. That's a strange thing to do, to get together to celebrate that death on a day that we call Good Friday. We even, some of us, wear the instrument of his execution round our necks as if we were wearing an electric chair or a needle for the lethal injection. We wear a cross round our necks. Isn't that a strange thing to do? Begging the question, what's so good about Good Friday? We're thinking about someone's death. What's so good about this day? Well, before we kind of address that question, wherever you were in the world over the last week, I was halfway across the globe, but you won't have missed the news that the Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris caught fire. And apparently, according to the news, it came within 20 to 30 minutes of being completely and utterly destroyed. Okay, it was just about salvaged. And President Emmanuel Macron said that the restoration of the cathedral is going to make it look even more beautiful than it looked before. But actually, I looked into the history of this cathedral, and it was built from 1160 to 1260. It took a century to complete the building of that cathedral. And even in 1260, it wasn't really finished. They kept adding bits to it. Which means that to restore this is going to take years and years. But it reminded me of something really profound that Jesus says in the Gospel of John. In fact, all of the Gospel authors who record Jesus' life record Jesus as having said this phrase. Now, to give you some context, Jesus has arrived in Jerusalem, the center of the Jewish world. He's gone into the temple, the center of Jewish worship. And what's he discovered there? Not people bowing down to God, not people offering sacrifices, but moneylenders ripping each other off, people bartering to make cash in the house of the Lord. Jesus is furious. He starts flipping tables. He drives the moneylenders out of the temple. And as he leaves, some priests approach him, people who love the temple and work there and think it's a great thing. And they say, what gives you the authority? What gives you the right to do this? Who made you in charge of the temple? And Jesus says this, destroy this temple and I will raise it again in 3 days. Destroy this temple and I will raise it again in 3 days. Now, this would have evoked a huge memory in the minds of the Jewish leaders of the time. 500 years previously, their first Jerusalem temple had been destroyed by the Babylonians. They were carried off into captivity. A century later, they came back and rebuilt the temple. They respond to Jesus here with, "How can you say you can rebuild this temple in 3 days? It took us 46 years to build it." But John, who's writing his gospel after the destruction of that temple, says that the temple Jesus was talking about was actually his body. Here, Jesus hints at two different things. One, he hints that something better than the temple is on its way. And two, he hints that he's going to die. Says this temple, and he refers to himself, is going to be destroyed. But I'm going to raise it again in 3 days. Jesus did die. His body was destroyed. He died on a Roman cross 2,000 years ago. And today we're gathered together to think about and celebrate that. But why? Why did Jesus die? I want to spend the rest of the next 10 minutes or so addressing that question in two ways. We're going to think about the historical reasons that Jesus died. What were the events that led up to his death? What crime did he commit to be killed on a Roman cross? And then we're going to think about why it matters. In other words, we're going to think about why it matters in our brains and why it matters in our hearts, why it matters for our souls, why it matters forever and for eternity. So let's begin with kind of the reasons Jesus died, the historical reasons. Well, I want to give you one. There's a number of kind of theories of why Jesus died. Maybe the Romans thought he was a political threat. Maybe it's because he didn't respect the law enough. But actually, none of these theories make as much sense as the one the Bible tells us, which is that Jesus was killed because the message he preached and the actions he took were explicit and radical. They were countercultural. Jesus came and told people that the only way to God was through him. And that ruffled some feathers. I wonder how often we remember that actually Jesus was a radical who ruffled feathers and upset some powerful people. I think often we gag Jesus, we censor him. We think of him as this really nice guy that everyone loved, but actually Jesus' message caused some offense. I wonder if you've ever seen the face that's going to appear behind me before. I heard this story this week and it really moved me. It's a very sad story about a guy called Jairo Mora Sandoval, who's pictured, who was a 26-year-old Costa Rican biology student who devoted his life to protecting the eggs of sea turtles. Okay, that's what he was passionate about. For reasons that I won't go into, sea turtle eggs are very expensive on the black market. So our friend Jairo here committed his life to protecting these eggs from poachers. But one day he was captured, tied up, and beaten to the point where he died, and his body was left on a beach in May 2013. Because of his convictions, because of the message he spoke, because he said, "I'm going to protect these sea turtle eggs," powerful people acted. He offended some powerful people. I think often we can censor Jesus. We can limit him to the good moral teacher that he was. We can limit him to the healer that he was. But he's so much more than that as well. Jesus' message was explicit and countercultural. He criticized the use of the temple, a dangerous thing to do. But it's not even this that really riled the chief priests. Going to read from a different gospel, from Luke's gospel. At this point, Jesus has been arrested and he's on trial before a Roman governor called Pontius Pilate and a Jewish governor called, kind of a king called Herod. And Jesus is on trial. Notice that three names are associated with Jesus here on his trial. This is what really gets to the chief priests. At daybreak, the council of the elders of the people, both the chief priests and the teachers of the law, met together, and Jesus was led before them. "If you are the Messiah," they said, "tell us." Jesus answered, "If I tell you, you will not believe me. And if I asked you, you would not answer. But from now on, the Son of Man will be seated at the right hand of the mighty God." They all asked, "Are you then the Son of God?" He replied, "You say that I am." Then they said, "Why do we need any more testimony? We've heard it from his own lips." Do you see the irony, the genius thing that Jesus is doing here? Actually, Jesus hasn't explicitly said that he is the Messiah or the Son of Man or the Son of God. But it's become so obvious that other people are saying it for him. They say, "Are you this person?" Jesus says, "You've said so." But claiming to be these people, the Messiah, the Son of Man, the Son of God. These were all legendary figures the Old Testament of the Bible had been prophesying about, saying one day this person is going to come and it's going to mean something big. The Messiah, it says in the book of Isaiah, the prophet in the Old Testament, is the one who's going to come and draw God's people together from all corners of the earth. The Son of Man, who's prophesied about in the Old Testament book of Daniel, is the one who's going to be given all authority under heaven and earth, all power that is available, and who's going to rule over God's kingdom forever. And the Son of God was a name given exclusively to the people of Israel that Jesus claims as his own and says, I am the Son of God, and I'm going to change what it means to be a child of God. And now anyone who believes in Jesus is adopted into God's family. But to claim to be the Messiah or the Son of Man or the Son of God, that is what ruffles the feathers of these chief priests. You see, they're left with two options after this. They either believe Jesus, believe that he is the Messiah, the Son of Man and the Son of God, in which case their only option is to bow down before him, or they refuse to believe. So they have to execute him for blasphemy. They choose the latter, and Jesus dies on a cross. The Jews at the time weren't allowed to carry out public executions. They escalated the matter to the Romans, but the Romans found nothing wrong with Jesus. But as the Roman governor Pontius Pilate says, what's wrong with him? A crowd shouts back, crucify him, stirred up by these chief priests. It's very somber, isn't it, when you think about that? We're thinking about a death today. We still haven't approached the question, what's good about Good Friday? Well, that's what I want to answer now. As we look slightly beyond the history of what happened to Jesus and look at the reason instead, you could call this the theological answer. I'm going to call it the answer that matters for our hearts. I want to give you three quick things reasons that Jesus died that matter to you and I today. And the first is that Jesus died because God said so. God had a plan to redeem humanity, and that plan involved Jesus dying on a cross. You get this beautiful, heart-wrenching moment in the Garden of Gethsemane as it's recorded in Matthew chapter 26, where Jesus kneels before his Father and says, my Father, if it is possible, may this cup, this suffering, this pain be taken away from me. Yet not as I will, but as you will. Jesus chooses the cross out of total obedience to his Father. Jesus died because God said so. Here's why that matters to you and I. Jesus died because we desperately needed saving. Jesus died because we needed saving. I wonder if you've ever been in a point in your life where you've needed rescue. You've been in serious trouble and you've needed help. I was 7 years old, all right, and I went to Centre Parks with my mum and dad. And I remember getting to the bottom of the rapids that I'd gone down with my dad. And at the end of the rapids, you've got kind of the water flowing out really fast, and it creates this kind of waterfall effect. And I got caught underneath it, and I got dragged underneath, my legs flailing up in the air, completely and utterly stuck. And my dad reached in and grabbed me by the shorts and yanked me out, okay? I was 7 years old, completely helpless under this waterfall. And he rescued me. Humanity was in a mess when Jesus came. Because of the problem of sin, people turning their back on God, the disobedience that leads to so much of the destruction we see in the world around us, left humanity in a mess, in need of rescue. But here's what it says in Romans chapter 5:8. This is the Apostle Paul speaking. God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Do you know how good that news is? That news is that Jesus didn't come because humanity was cleaning up its act and it was kind of a reward. Him saying, well done, you're doing great, I'm going to come and do a bit more. No, Jesus came at humanity's worst point when everything was lost. Do you know what that means for you and I today? It means that Jesus isn't saying, clean yourself up a bit and then you can have a relationship with me. It means he's saying, I love you now. I want to know you now. I can save you now. Jesus died because we needed saving. Throughout the whole Old Testament of the Bible, you get this idea that the penalty for sin is death. And there's one way to cover up that penalty. There's one way to cover up your sin, and that's through a sacrifice. throughout the Old Testament, the sacrifices that God demands are animals, because animals, you can have kind of pure animals. You'd pick the best sheep from the flock. You'd pick the best goat. You'd pick the best bull, the best dove. But a human being couldn't possibly be perfect enough to sacrifice to God until one person lived a perfect life and became a sacrifice that didn't need to be made again, that covered sin once and for all. Jesus died because we needed saving, paid the price for our sin. Finally, Jesus died because death wasn't the end. This is Easter weekend. Good Friday is Good Friday because of Easter Sunday, right? You see, if Jesus didn't come back from the dead, Good Friday would be awful Friday. Good Friday would be the end of the story. Good Friday would be the full stop at the end of the Bible. But actually, it goes on. Death wasn't the end. Jesus rose again. And the next step after that, after Jesus ascends back to heaven, is the foundations of the church that we're a part of today, if we follow Jesus. In 1 Corinthians 15, verse 26, the Apostle Paul says this: the last enemy to be destroyed is death. J.K. Rowling hijacked that for Harry Potter, okay? But it's from the Bible. The last enemy to be destroyed is death. I love that. I think it's incredible. On the cross, as he died for us, Jesus dealt with the problem of sin so that anyone who believes in him can appear before God washed completely clean. By rising again, Jesus destroyed the last enemy, death. If you return on Sunday morning, you'll hear even more about that. But I want to leave you with a final thought now as we reflect on the death of Jesus that means so much to us today. And this thought I want to leave you with kind of depends on where you're at in your faith. If you're a Christian today, then reflect on the radical Jesus who died on a cross because his message was explicit, because he wasn't afraid to preach what was the true gospel. Because he said, I am the only way to God. In John's gospel, Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and the only way to the Father is through me. Those statements landed him on a cross. And today we are called to live radical, not comfortable, radical lives which imitate our Savior. And if you're not a Christian here today, I told you at the beginning that I couldn't identify one point in my life where I became a Christian. Lots of people can. I can't. But I can identify a number of milestones in my life where things that I knew in my head became convictions I believed in my heart. Things like I knew that Jesus died 2,000 years ago. But I began to believe that Jesus died for me. Things like I believed that Jesus rose again from the dead. But actually, I learned to believe that now I will rise again after I die, following in Jesus' footsteps because he's defeated the last enemy that is death. Like I knew that Jesus was sitting at the right hand of God because the Bible tells me that. But in my heart now, I believe that Jesus is my advocate for the Father. That because of everything Jesus has done, one day I will stand before God the Father and I'll be allowed to be there in his holy presence because of Jesus. Easter weekend 2019 could be the beginning of your faith journey. If you're not a Christian here today, that journey can begin with a prayer. It can begin with a faith step. But this could be that for you. And it will change everything. I want to finish with just the end of a poem that I read this week. I thought was absolutely brilliant. And it answers that question, what's so good about Good Friday? It's by someone called Alan Allegra. And it says this: Good Friday is good because of the death of Jesus the Savior who gave his last breath. So you, friend, and I could be cleared of our guilt, redeemed by the blood of the Lamb that was spilt. Mourn not, my dear soul, for the death of the Lamb, for that cross made the bridge to the great I Am. Christ paid the price, rose again to God's side, and brought us next Sunday the resurrection tide. Without Easter Sunday, Good Friday is not Good Friday. But we have Easter Sunday. We celebrate Jesus defeating sin at the cross and defeating death when he walked out of the tomb.